At our house, Easter usually starts with kids running through the yard hunting for eggs and ends with everyone gathered around the table for a big family meal. Before the weekend, I like to stop by my local Total Wine & More to grab a great bottle to share. With so many bottles to choose from, whether it's a favorite wine or something new to try, it's easy to discover something amazing. And it's nice knowing you're getting the lowest prices while you're there. If you're not sure what to grab, one of their friendly guides can help point you in the right direction. Find what you love and love what you find, only at Total Wine & More. Curbside pickup and delivery available in most areas. Visit TotalWine.com to learn more. Spirits not sold in Virginia, North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
Marketing is hard. But I'll tell you a little secret. It doesn't have to be. Let me point something out. You're listening to a podcast right now, and it's great. You love the host. You seek it out and download it. You listen to it while driving, working out, cooking, even going to the bathroom. Podcasts are a pretty close companion. And this is a podcast ad. Did I get your attention? You can reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a pre-produced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience in their favorite podcasts with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com, that's Libsyn ads.com today.
Welcome to Act 3, the podcast where we explore how to thoughtfully shape the rest of our lives. I'm your host, Kara Gray. This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my retirement coaching service where I help executives and professionals plan their Act 3. For more information, stay tuned until the end. Today, I welcome Elvie Moore to the podcast. Elvie is a prominent figure in the performing arts world with a career spanning over 5 decades. She began as associate professor at the University of Chicago before transitioning into arts administration. Elvie served as director of corporate and foundation development at the National Symphony Orchestra, and later as general director of the Washington Ballet. In 2000, she tells me she retired, but at the same time, she founded the Laurel Fund for Performing Arts, where she continues to serve as president. Her contributions extend to dance literature, authoring award-winning books on notable dance figures. Throughout her career, Elvie has been instrumental in expanding the reach and vision of various arts organizations, leaving a lasting impression on the cultural landscape of Washington, D.C. and beyond. Welcome, Elvie, to the podcast.
Thank you.
I am in Chicago, and I always like to start these conversations by rewinding a little bit back to the beginning of your career. And so Your time as associate professor at the University of Chicago is also quite a big stretch of your career. So I would love to hear about that time in your life and how it got started.
Well, I was appointed first as an instructor and then an assistant professor and then an associate professor at the University of Chicago. And I was there for almost 17 years. And as I told you, I love Chicago.
Yeah.
And I had a really great time at the university. I taught dance at the physical ed department. And then a few years after that, I was asked to teach in the humanities department. And I taught dance history and some interdisciplinary courses in the arts. So that was great fun. And it was also at that time that I was appointed as a dance panelist for the Illinois Arts Council, which led me to become a dance panelist with the National Endowment for the Arts. And that's how I began to, you know, learn more about not just the arts activities in Chicago, but around the country. And so after almost 17 years, as I said, at the University of Chicago, I resigned and accepted a position as a consultant to the National Endowment for the Arts in Washington, D.C.
Ah, okay. There's the transition point.
Right, right. And because I had served as a panelist for several years, they asked me to come and do some evaluations of arts organizations around the country that had gotten grants from the endowment. So I did for a whole year. I traveled all around.
And, oh,
fun. Yeah. And then actually that resulted in a publication on my findings on those organizations. I don't even have a copy of that, and I don't know if it still exists, but, and that was in 80, I guess it was, 79, 80, something like that. So it's probably no longer around. And yeah. I don't even remember the organizations I went to visit, but but it was fun. And so I commuted between Washington and Chicago during that year. And then after the school year, then my family moved to Washington and we've been here ever since. So wow. I've been in Washington for, oh my goodness, what is it, over 40 years, 45 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So I consider myself a Washingtonian now.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so the transition was rather natural. I mean, you were recruited to the administrative position from being in a professor doing the dance.
Correct.
Position. Yeah. 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 Well,
so
that made
it was a nice segue, nice transition, actually.
Yeah, I love that. So then after your year of working as a consultant and traveling all around, tell me about the National Symphony Orchestra, because then you went into that world for a few years.
Right, right. Yeah. I sort of learned about fundraising and I got that job at the symphony, and I liked it a lot and met a lot of wonderful people, many of whom are still friends, members of the board of the symphony and people in the funding world. And so I was perfectly happy there until the search committee of the Washington Ballet found out that I was in Washington and asked if I would come and apply. And I said, well, I suppose I should. And that was that. I joined the Washington Ballet in 1983.
Yeah.
And was there until 2000.
I'm just curious what you found to be the differences between a dance organization and a classical music organization, like behind the scenes?
Not all that much. I mean, the challenges are pretty much the same, you know? Raising money.
Right.
I think there are lots of parallels between those two organizations.
Yes. But is it fair to say that dance has your heart?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and theater too.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Then 2000 came. Mm-hmm. And you told me that you retired in 2000. But from what I understand, you have been anything but sitting on the couch.
No, you know what? I don't even remember why or how I started. Well, no, I remember the how, but I don't remember why I thought it was a good thing to start the Laurel Fund for the Performing Arts. You know, it was an organization that I founded, and the whole mission was to provide scholarships to young people who were going into the arts in music, theater, and dance. I don't know. It was just a really nice segue, I guess. And I had lots of people who said that was a great idea, that it had not been done before. And so I went out and raised some money and started the organization. And let's see, from 2000 to 2020, end of 23, I had the Laurel Fund.
And okay.
Yeah, we just, I can't even remember how many scholarships we gave to kids during those years. But it was fun because, you know, they got the scholarship. The money went to their school, not to the kid, but to the school for their studies in music, theater, or dance, and in return for which they had to go with us to non-traditional venues like hospitals, senior citizens' homes, and that way they could perform, but I also insisted that they talk about why they were trying to become a pianist or a dancer or an actor.
Yeah, so it was across all arts disciplines, these scholarships.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was really, really fun. And I'm still in touch with some of those kids. They're no longer kids, some of whom have actually gone into professional careers. So And then in addition to that, I started producing some performances, not just of the kids, because we, you know, we also had yearly performances of the kids that was open to the public. Mm-hmm. But then there was a time when the Dance Theater of Harlem was in hiatus, mm-hmm. and Virginia Johnson, who was then the artistic director, and I talked about, you know, maybe bringing them to Washington and trying their, you know, the group that was starting again. So I did. I did that for 2 years. I brought them in, had their performances at the Lincoln Theater and then at the Arc in Washington. And then, of course, they went on to bigger and better things, and they're now performing at the Kennedy Center and all over the world. But then also in 2015, one of the choreographers that I had brought to Washington to work with Washington Ballet, I was really intrigued with this choreography, and I saw quite a bit of his works, and I decided, you know, oh, they should be seen in Washington, in the U.S. So I kind of pretty single-handedly brought them here to the U.S. That was quite a chore. not only did I have to work with lawyers for visas, and then, you know, getting the theaters and raising money so that they could, you know, we could do that. And it was a lot of work, but it was great fun. And I was very happy and very proud to have brought them to the U.S. And so they performed at the Joyce Theater in New York, mm-hmm. and in Washington, at the Kennedy Center in Washington.
Wow.
And yeah, it was really fun. So the next year, the general director of the Polish Opera Company invited me as their guest for a whole week. So I went, because that was not my first time to Poland. But so that was a nice thing.
Yeah, a nice perk out of it that you got to have a trip there, another trip to Europe.
Right.
So a lot of what I talk about and help my clients with is this idea of finding purpose in retirement. And certainly the fund gave you that in spades, and it, like, 23 years worth. What amount of time after you retired, did you spend then? This sounds like a heck of a lot of work. Like, what, how much were you spending on work on this fund?
I don't know. I never really thought about it. I just said, you know, the work has to be done and you just do it. And actually, there were, at one point, I used to say that I was working a lot harder than
but, I bet.
Yeah. But, you know, you do what you need to do and you don't count the hours. You just do it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's incredible. So yeah. Now, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that during those years too, and this is pretty funny, I owned a franchise of Curves, which was a fitness program for women.
I remember Curves.
Yep. I actually had three of them at one time.
Wow.
One in D.C., two in D.C., and one in Bethesda, Maryland. And that was also great fun. I forgot all about that until a friend of mine, who was doing an interview with me too, said, well, didn't you do something about Curves? And I said, oh, yeah.
How did you get into that?
You know, after I retired,
yes,
I traveled around the country visiting friends and relatives. And in one of the places, my friend said, let's go work out at this place that I've heard about. So we did. And looked like it was really fun and also good work. I mean, you know, you use your entire body for that 30 minutes that you're there.
Yeah, it was like a circuit workout, right? Like you went around to the different, I remember this.
Correct, yeah. And I was just so intrigued. I didn't know anything about franchises or doing a business like that. But I was just intrigued. So I wrote to the company and I said, so what does one have to do to have a Curves in D.C.? And they said, well, you do this, you apply, you know, da-da-da-da-da, the whole thing. So I went to Waco, Texas, for their training. And then I opened the first one in the area in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Then I opened a second one at Capitol Hill, but it was really not for me. It was for the mother of my daughter-in-law, who was moving from Florida to D.C. and wanted to have, you know, some business. So I said, okay, I'll start this for you, but then you can take it over. So that was the second one. And the third one, I just decided, well, Bethesda didn't have any curves either, so why not open one? So I did.
Wow. So do you recommend franchising is like an option for retirement? I'm curious, like how much of your time this took? You know, like this also sounds like...
Right. Well, the hardest part of that business was finding staff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I couldn't be there. I was doing other things.
Yeah.
And I would go in the morning to do my workout with them. And then I'd go do stuff with the Laurel Fund. In fact, my assistant at the Laurel Fund also worked for Curves. So we were doing both.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was great fun. It was a very good program, actually, for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a lot of very interesting women there, and some of whom are still friends. And, you know, but then 2008 happened.
Yeah.
And things went south. Membership dropped, and the rent was so high, and I decided, nah, this is it. I can't do it. My accountant actually said, you're supposed to be making money, not subsidizing this. I think you better get out of it. So I did. I closed the last one in 2010.
Okay. You started this amazing fund that provided scholarships and opportunity and career paths for all these young children. You owned three Curves franchises. What else aren't you telling me that you've been doing since you, quote, retired, unquote?
Well, I've been on the board of a couple of organizations in the area.
Uh-huh.
Very briefly on the board of the Dana Tyson Burgess Dance Company. And then I'm on the board of the Asian American Forum. I served as president for that for a couple of years. And now I just got on the board of the Young Artists of America, which kind of have the same mission as sort of my Laurel Fund. In fact, when I decided to dissolve, is that the right word?
The Laurel Fund.
The rest of the money went to Young Artists of America because I believed in their mission, and so yeah. So I belong to three book clubs.
Okay. Fiction. So, do you enjoy reading fiction? Is it fiction?
Yeah, and nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've also started playing pickleball.
The best pastime ever. Social, active, like it fills so many requirements in our lives. And pickleball is exploding. So,
oh, yeah. It's the fastest growing sport in America.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it's social and it keeps you active. And, you know, I really enjoy playing with a lot of different people.
Yeah. So. Fantastic. That's really good. And you're meeting new people all the time, too, which I think is
absolutely
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you are a very good example of how to live an incredibly enriched retirement. What's next?
More travel, I suppose. You know, when I was with the Washington Ballet, I took the company on a lot of tours around the world. I think it was like 25 countries that we went to perform. And, you know, I've always loved traveling, and it was so much nicer to travel without a group of people, you know, that I had to organize.
I bet it's quite freeing to do your own
right,
thing.
Right, right. Yeah. So, and for many years, I was the member of an organization called the International Women's Forum. And we had conferences around the world, you know, every couple of years. And so with them, I traveled to Jordan and to Argentina and to, I can't remember the other places, but, you know. But myself now, I've also been traveling quite a bit.
And what's on your list? Where are your next destinations?
Well, I've been to Morocco, but I am taking a group of people with the Asian American Forum to Morocco in May. But I go with several friends to Santa Fe, New Mexico, every summer to visit my daughter who lives there, and also to go to the Santa Fe Opera.
So, wonderful.
Yeah. Let's see. Where else do I want to go? There's still a lot of places I want to go to, but that hasn't been on the list yet.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. You have time to figure that out. And lastly, I will ask you, do you have any advice for people who are approaching retirement and are maybe a little trepidatious, don't know what's around the corner?
Well, I think that anybody who's facing retirement should start asking herself or himself, what am I interested in that I want to pursue that I couldn't pursue while I was still working? Mm-hmm. What kind of work or volunteer work is there around that I can be involved in or with? I don't think that to retire means to just sit on the couch and watch TV.
Neither do I. There's so many more years left.
Right, right. And there's so much to do. So much to do, so much to see, so much to read.
I agree.
Wonderful.
Well, Elvie, thank you so much for your time. It's been really a pleasure chatting with you.
Well, thank you. I like talking with you, and I hope I'll meet you sometime when I come to Chicago.
Please.
Try to come to Chicago once or twice a year.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah. We can meet up for a coffee. It would be great.
Yeah, right, right. Okay.
Sounds good.
This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my retirement coaching firm. I help executives and professionals plan the non-financial part of their retirement, like how to discover new purpose and how you want to spend your time. I offer a one-on-one coaching retirement blueprint package where we work together to discover some new avenues of exploration for your Act 3. This coaching is completely custom, and we'll provide you with a ton of resources and support as you transition to this new stage of life. For all the details, please go to goodmorningfreedom.com/services.